Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Sarah is gracing us with her presence today because Frenchie is on vacation. I don't know what vacation is. I haven't taken.
And he's also in London. Like, who goes on vacation in London? I love London, don't get me wrong, but that's not like what, when you picture vacation, London is not usually it.
I think they're in Paris now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. I mean, I don't like Paris. I prefer London over Paris anyway, but whole Euro trip.
Never been to either, so I can't comment, but I'm a little jealous because I'm in gloomy Pennsylvania. At least, like, it looks sunny where you are. I can't really tell.
It is sunny in Miami. Race week in Miami. The sun is shining. The vibes are high.
Are you
excited?
We're
getting ready for a busy week.
Do you have, like, fun plans, like, all week?
Yeah, so we're making content for Grid Click all week, and then we have some like fun lunches and dinners and parties and stuff. So it's definitely going to be a super busy week for sure.
Okay. Where can people follow along?
Oh my God. You can follow us on Instagram. We are at Grid Click. We focus on elevating women in motorsports and women's voices in motorsports, or overall diversity in motorsports. So we have some really exciting interviews with a few select people that I won't drop their names just yet. But if you follow us, you can see a few interviews from them that we're doing tomorrow and Thursday, and some other pieces that we have planned.
And your new Miami stickers that I saw your co-founder post on Instagram. I'm gonna need to buy some because I'm gonna need to add those to the laptop collection.
Yeah, so we've had a lot of people ask us for merch before, and this is something that we do in our free time outside of our 9-to-5 jobs. So merch has not been something that we've super prioritized, but at least for Miami, we did release a set of limited edition stickers for the Miami Grand Prix. So if you do want those, the link is in our bio on our Instagram for you to get them. And maybe if they're successful, we might dig into the merch world a bit more, but not exactly our forte at the moment.
Gonna need like a hoodie next, I think. You know, personally, you can do like, I forget, like Teespring or whatever, where you don't have any overhead of buying like the merch and whatnot. We did that.
Yeah,
the quality isn't great, but
that's what we're doing at the moment. We have a drop ship thing set up, so we don't actually have to hold any inventory. We don't have to worry about any of that. We just obviously did the design. We ordered some samples. Samples came in and we loved them. So if we continue to find success, then we'll probably go through the same person to do other items. We are looking at like doing some fun things. Like, again, this is all in plans, but not actually being done yet. But we're thinking like fanny packs. I don't know why.
Ooh, okay.
Or just probably, like feeling the vibes.
Probably won't buy a fanny pack. That's not my vibe. But also,
I have
like,
to tell you, at the last,
I know where
at
you're
Long
going
Beach,
with this. Yep.
I know where you're going. You know where I'm going, but nobody else does. At Long Beach, I, as a joke, got a Arrow McLaren fanny pack for my friend. And I ended up having to use it on the airplane ride home because I just like didn't have any pockets. So I was like, okay, great. This is great. Like, I don't have pockets, but I need like my phone, my like ID, whatever. And it came in so handy that I have now kept it. And I now wear it almost every day. So sponsor me, Arrow McLaren, or at least just pay me the $25 back or whatever it was for that crappy fanny pack that I now use all the time.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.
I mean, it looks nice. Granted, I'm basing this off of like an Instagram story, but
it looks nice. The quality is not exactly there, but I mean, that's just typical with Arrow McLaren in general. Sorry.
Oh,
woof. Moving
starting
on.
Starting off with a burn. Okay, well, we'll go to F1 first. There's really not too much to talk about. there's not even too much news to talk about. Thankfully, some of this boring stuff probably to save, but let's get done predictions first. Okay. Let me get up the results too. Frenchie had Esteban Ocon having a good weekend. He finished 15th, so no. I had Kevin Magnussen finished 13th. Also no.
Barely better.
Second in sprint. We both assumed that Max would win the sprint race, so we had second place going to Frenchie had Russell. I had Lance Stroll. We screwed the pooch on that one too.
Wait, I'm sorry. Russell and Lance Stroll for second?
In the sprint race.
In what world would that happen?
This, in a world where we don't pick Max or Sergio every pick.
Oh my God. Okay, continue. Yikes. And
yeah, I know. Bad weekend. Frenchie had Nick DeVries. That's probably as accurate of a pick as we'll have all season. I had Sergio Perez. We don't need to say anymore. We can moving on from that one.
This is just a whole lot of chaos.
You know, I went with, and I think I said to Frenchie like afterwards last week, I was like, I want to go hot take on most of my predictions this week and not just pick the obvious things. And I did that. I just wasn't right, like even a little bit. So
there are actually opposites. Frenchie was 100% on the mark and you were just...
All right.
Complete, you know, opposite.
Calm down over there.
I'm excited for Frenchie to listen to this and be like, text in our group chat, be like, heck yeah, Sarah, taking my side.
Yep.
It's going to be great.
And okay, so the race, it happened. It was boring. It was dreadful. Drivers said it was boring because the DRS zones were shorter this year than they've been in years past.
Correct.
So
I also am now seeing a trend where Nick DeVries really likes walls. You know, it's like, remember like the Mazda spin era? I feel like there needs to be like a fun terminology for Nick going into walls.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're getting at. You're not wrong. He had really like just a completely awful weekend.
He did.
And he made,
and that's not new.
No, he made Yuki Tsunoda look like a good driver this week. And Yuki did have a solid weekend, but like not great, but like he ended up in the points. Nick ended up in the wall every session of the weekend.
I love that. He ended up with the points, but Nick ended up in the wall. Fantastic. Yeah.
So I don't know. That team is a mess.
Yeah.
I don't have too much else on that one. Oh, my predictions went away.
Well, I think the other thing to note about that is obviously when we're looking at other racing series and we're seeing these incredible drivers that
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Don't have super license points or are not given the opportunity to test or are given the opportunity to test and like aren't moving forward. So like obviously we've seen the likes of Colin Herta, blah, 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 look at the F1 world. And so of course you can't know how they're going to perform in F1, but Nick is pretty old. And so for him to be getting into the sport in his rookie year at his age at the moment, and obviously again, very early on in the season, of course, he needs time to adjust and understand and what that looks like. But I don't know. I think that there's so many other drivers that are going to be looking at his performance. And if it just continues as it is, they're going to, you know, be gunning that down.
I think I asked Frenchie this, and it might have been a couple weeks ago at this point. But so I'm going to have to Google his last F2 season because it's been 3 or 4 years here. Let me pull this up. His last F2 season was, oh God, it's 2017, 2018. Okay, his last F2 season was 2018. So that means between then and, you know, last year when he did one race. Did he just do one race last year for Williams?
No idea. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Correct. Yeah. Correct.
So essentially there's been 5 years between F2 and F1 where he's driven Formula E. He's driven some LMP2 cars. He's driven in the European Le Mans series. So I just feel like, you know, Formula E is such a different, you know, driving style and drivetrain to a Formula 2 or Formula 1 car. That five-year layoff is way worse than his actual age.
Thoughts? Yeah, that's true. No, I agree with that. I completely agree with that. It's actually really surprising and interesting when you see drivers that take, obviously he was racing another series, but take that time off between F2 and F1 and being able to land the F1 seat. Because as for me, working in motorsport marketing as like my full-time job, some of the drivers that I work with haven't had a ride in a year or two. And it's a lot harder for them to get sponsorship. It's a lot harder for them to get a seat just because it's been a number of years. Again, even if they're racing another series in the interim, or even if they're doing other random races in the interim, if they still aren't on that ladder, then it's a lot harder for them to find the time and space that people will give it to them. So that's why I think it's really interesting that Nick was now given this chance and was now brought to F1, when typically you see the ladders happen a lot more closely together. So I completely agree.
Does he, and you may not know, does he have personal sponsors that are on the AlphaTauri car?
I don't know that answer, but I have to imagine so.
Right. I would assume so.
Yeah. I would have to assume so. I don't know. I don't know that off the top of my head. I don't even really know what his family does.
No, I have no idea on this one. This is where we need Frenchie, because he can just like,
yeah,
he just knows everything. He's like, yeah, you know, his dad owns a winery in the southern coast of Australia. And
where's the phone a friend when you need it?
I know. Can you imagine if we called him like on vacation? We're like, Frenchie, who is Nick DeVries' dad, and what does he do for a living?
It's 9 p.m. where he is, so it's actually pretty early.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But I don't see any. I'm looking at a picture of the AlphaTauri livery.
I'm looking up his family.
Yeah, this website's not even loading.
Father. Interesting. His father, the description of what his father does is an authorized person to buy and sell specific goods, especially motor vehicles. So it sounds like he's in some sort of like supply chain role within cars. And then his mother, it literally just says little is known about her. That's it.
She exists. I was actually just, it
looks like his parents got divorced and then she just like doesn't stick around the cameras. Yeah, it just says her private life is largely unknown. So I'm interested to know more about then his father's role in supporting his son as well, if he's in the motor vehicle quote unquote world, and if that maybe has something to do with it as well.
Off topic, but on the F1 side, and in a couple of minutes we'll go to IndyCar. Fernando Alonso, I know he's not your favorite driver ever, but this weekend a bunch of his radio communication, I was listening through, what's this app called? Multiviewer for F1, but also what they played through the broadcast. A lot of times was, hey, tell Lance to do this, tell Lance to do that, to help Lance Stroll out. This is far and away nothing we would have expected from the Fernando Alonso of maybe the Ferrari era. Are we sensing a slightly older Alonso as maybe being good for Lance Stroll's potential future success? Is there more there than maybe we would have thought before, at least before the season started?
So my answer to your question is yes. However, I have additional context as well.
Go for it.
So after, I was also when seeing those radio communications happen when he was like, I think one of them specifically was like, tell Lance about my brake balance suggestion, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I saw that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I wouldn't have expected that from Alonso, but like, great. I'm glad to see it. Right. And then someone had actually asked him in a media interview after the race, hey, you notice that you've been helping out your teammate, basically asking the same question as you, is like, is this like a newer, yeah, more mature version of yourself? And he basically said, no, I've been doing this forever, but F1 is now just broadcasting it. So I guess they're just trying to take like to me now. And I thought that was really interesting that it seems that F1 has been a part of this story of like his like whatever villain era, villain arc. And he's basically was trying to say that he's been super helpful and like whatever, helpful, I guess, this entire time. But F1 just didn't want to talk about it. But then again, Alonso also calls himself a villain. So I don't know really how much that villain arc is really coming from F1.
It's probably a little bit of both, but
yeah,
good to know.
I thought that that was really interesting when he said, no, I've been doing this my entire time and F1 is now just broadcasting it, because I would think that that would be a storyline that F1 would like, that Alonso is helpful for his teammates.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the broadcasters talked about it right after, and then clearly they talked about it a little bit later. But then once it came to Monday and, you know, the news cycle picked back up, everybody was like, all right, let's talk about Red Bull again, and pretty much ignored that storyline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Last thing I have F1 related is Miami. So let me get up my app here with all the times and everything this weekend. But Sarah, you get to make Miami predictions in a second.
Ooh.
Last year we had any.
I'll make something up. Go ahead. Give it to me.
Let's see here. Oh, not yet. Hold on. Practice is Friday at, why are they doing it in the military time? I can't read military time that well.
I can
practice
tell you.
One is at 2:30. Practice two is at 4 p.m. Friday afternoon. Practice three is Saturday, just after lunchtime. Qualifying is Saturday at 4. I think I'll miss qualifying. And then the race is Sunday at 3:30, I believe, if I'm reading this correctly.
Yes, it is 3:30.
Yes, look at me, I'm so smart. Is there any, I know there's no F2 or F3 this weekend. Is there any other racing going on this weekend? Because there's nothing on the app.
Just Porsche Carrera.
Okay, well.
So there is Porsche Carrera. But
better than nothing.
I was actually talking to some of my colleagues about this the other day, that it's such a shame that they don't have any true supporting series like F2 or F1 Academy. Hint, nudge.
That's where I was going with this.
Well, F1 Academy, I understand, because that was announced so late that I'm sure that they just couldn't swing it, right?
Sure.
Like, it's just like a lot of that planning for that entire series has been very last minute. So I don't expect them to be on the ball as it comes to trying to coordinate that. And especially with the paddock this year at Hard Rock Stadium being moved, where the F1 paddock was last year was in a really bad spot. Like, it wasn't really near the track. It was like a pain in the butt to get to. And then in order to like, so I was in the supporting paddock because I was working at the W Series last year.
Yeah.
And so I was parking in the media parking lot, which is one of the closest parking lots. And it was still like a 45-minute walk to the paddock area, which is like crazy. And then if you're a normal person trying to attend this race, like, I live in Miami. I love Miami. Miami's great. This Miami last year is the first Formula One race I went to in person after watching it for so long. Like, it was a very important moment for me. It is not a race I suggest fans to go to because the experience is just like not there. Obviously, it's super expensive, whatever. I could have a whole episode just talking about that. But if you're a normal fan trying to get to Hard Rock Stadium, you get and you have a parking pass, you park at a lot like 15 minutes away, and then they shuttle you to basically the media lot, which then you have to walk 45 minutes. So it's like, it's just like a mess and a disaster the entire time.
Yeah.
So the paddock specifically, again, to close my loop, they moved it from the side of Hard Rock Stadium to actually inside the stadium. So it's on the football field, which I think is really interesting because that means there's shade. There's actually space for like seating and stuff versus last year, it was like all in the sun, really hot, really squished, really narrow, really tight. And then on the outside of it where the sporting paddock was, which is where Porsche was last year, as well as W Series was last year, they basically just had like tents, but like not even good tents. Like if there was a gust of wind, their tent would go over and their car would be screwed. Like, and they didn't have any proper infrastructure for any of the engineering teams. And it was just a mess and a disaster. So my mindset was, okay, if they're moving the F1 paddock from where it was last year to inside the stadium, why wouldn't they be able to take F2 and put it where the F1 paddock was, where there was actual infrastructure? They were in real buildings. They were not in tents, whatever. Like, there's space for it. And then the Porsche space could take up the whole space that was Porsche and W Series last year. Like, there's enough space for it. So I don't know why there wouldn't be more supporting series, especially for such a high visibility event like Miami. But then again, I don't work for F1. So I don't know why they make the decisions that they do.
Fair enough. Okay. Let's see. Oh, F1 predictions. Okay. Let me get out my notepad here so I can write this down, so we don't have to make Frenchie go back and listen. Who is having?
I mean, that would be fun anyway.
I know.
Sorry.
And I've probably done that before when he hasn't been able to join. So, you know, sorry, Frenchie. Who's having a good weekend?
So after Baku, we're obviously seeing some improvements in the Ferrari, which I'm liking. However, we also said that at this time last year, and then they ended up driving into the ground. So I'm kind of scared to jinx it, but I think that that would be cool. I'm pretty sure Max won here last year, if I remember correctly. And then I think it was Max and then the Ferrari boys.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm going to go anti-host, and I'm going to go with what I actually think is going to happen. And I think I'm going to say Max is going to win again, because if you see that Red Bull after they passed in Baku, remember when, I think it was Max passing Charles going from third to second, and he just like soared, someone said like 30 kilometers an hour faster on the straights. And in the Miami track, there's a lot of straights. So I think that that's going to be a Max win.
All right. Well, I'm going to do a hot take here, because why not? Let's say that Fred Alonso has a fantastic weekend and pulls out, I don't know, let's just say at least a podium finish. On that note,
that could be interesting.
Who's having a bad weekend?
I think Logan is going to totally bomb his home race.
Yeah. Okay. Well, ouch.
Your face after I said that was so funny.
And I don't know why I didn't expect it. Maybe because I just got a copy of an ad read for a new F1 show on Evergreen, this is not the ad read, but Chris Medland is one of the hosts.
Oh, that's cool.
And they mention, like, hey, mention how Logan Sargeant is racing in his home state this weekend. I'm like, oh, yeah.
So,
sure.
You know what's going to be really interesting about that is Miami is 70% Latino. So the track itself is going to be like majority Checo fans, larger majority of Checo fans than there will be Logan fans. And I don't think that Williams has predicted that or thought about that, because they're really like, Logan's home race, this is going to be a huge thing for Logan, like trying to like make that their thing, when in reality, it's like,
No, this is
Checo land. Like, that's, and a lot of people here don't really understand Logan. So that's going to be interesting.
Yep. I have a whole bunch of thoughts on him, but I'm not going to, maybe another time. On that note, I'm going to say Perez has a bad weekend. I think he's going to get a little too ballsy and maybe make a mistake because he wants to lead the championship after this weekend. And let's end up with one more prediction here. Good, bad. And okay, this is an over under of 8.5. So the over under is 8.5. How many times will the marina be mentioned in the race broadcast on Sunday?
Oh, over. Way over. Are you kidding? They've already like posted a million things. Because remember last year how there was like the fake water or whatever?
Yeah.
And they put real water in it this year. And I'm doing the quotation marks because it's like they just put a pool in, when they had pools last year too. So it's like the full marina that's around the boats, the fake boats, the real boats that they're importing and putting in the middle of the track, whatever, because of course, doesn't actually have water around them still. Like, that's still fake. So I don't know, but they posted on their socials a million times this week, like, the marina has real water this year. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. So yeah, 100% over, for okay. Sure over.
I'll take the under just because I don't want to agree with you.
Yeah, I got that when you said Checo having a bad weekend.
Oh, that was totally, you just kind of made me think like, oh, that would be a fun one to take. Like, I wasn't trying to disagree with you on that one. Yeah. I just thought, but like, that was fun.
It's interesting. That's interesting because I'm sure that he does feel all that pressure to try to take the championship. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he were to make a mistake because of that.
Before we get to IndyCar, the only F1 news I saw is Adrian Newey signed a contract extension with Red Bull. No surprise there. Why would you go anywhere else when they're probably paying you buttloads of money and are successful? And Toto Wolff is teaching an MBA course at Harvard Business School. The memes have been fantastic in the hour I saw before we started recording. And F1 team bosses want changes to sprint format that they created because of course.
Quickly before you go on, what course is Toto teaching?
Let's see here. He is an executive fellow and guest lecturer. I actually haven't read the article. I'm looking at it right now. He's teaching. Let's see. Does this say? I think I did see it, but I don't see.
Is it like a business course or is it like something ridiculous?
I'm guessing because it's Harvard's business school, I feel like it's going to be some business course.
I don't know. Harvard has some whack courses.
I'm not surprised, but I don't see it on motorsport.com in terms of what the course is, and I don't feel like Googling it right now.
That's fine. I'll find it later. That's really interesting though.
And
sorry, sprint race. Yeah, I'm shocked that they want to change the format of the sprint race. Couldn't imagine that.
Yeah, because you know, it got mixed reviews from drivers last week. The reaction from fans has been lukewarm. I don't know what you think, but I'm going to get my opinion out there real quick. Then we'll get yours. Then we'll go to IndyCar. Mm-hmm. Sprint races in theory, cool. Sprint races in actuality, nobody really wants to take too many chances because they are just going to have trouble come Sunday. So and it wasn't that exciting. You know, there was a couple interesting passes. Did it change the grand scheme of the weekend? No. Did it make Saturday or the whole like race week in general that much better? Also, no. So, you know, instead we got Logan Sargeant with another suspension change, and Sergio Perez had a nice win, I guess, if you call it a win. But really, did it change anything? No. Did it change your opinion of Baku as a whole for the weekend? No. So they're stupid. They're a complete waste of time.
In my opinion, it's what they're trying to do with all of this, right? Whether you're talking about the original sprint format that they introduced or it's the new sprint format that they're introducing, is they're trying to gain more interest and excitement for the rest of the race weekend versus just the race itself. So in order to do that, they're trying to gain that extra excitement from the newer fans, keep them engaged, because after this big wave, they are scared of losing them. So they want to change the format, make things exciting, fine. You can do that once. You can't do that over and over and over again, because then you're just going to lose people. Like, if people come in and learn this super complicated sport because they want to watch it, and then you change it, and then they have to learn that too, and then you change it, and then you have to learn that too. Again, the basis of them changing it is to keep engagement, but they're actually going to lose engagement because they keep changing it and because they're making people learn new things constantly and they just are confused and they're not going to keep up with it. So again, that's like more my marketing perspective versus like the actual racing perspective. But I think if you're going to make a big change like that, you do it and you stick with it.
Because I feel like, you know, we've already changed it once or twice previously, and there were so many comments I saw on Twitter this weekend that were, wait, what is this format? How is the weekend format? What does this do?
Exactly.
And these are people who like are more than casual race fans. So it's not somebody, you know, who's just plopping down on the TV or watched F1 for the first time this year because of Drive to Survive. Like, these are people who I've known for years and are longtime race fans, and they're like, what the hell is going on right now?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how you're going to lose people.
Yes.
So they're trying to get more TV coverage and TV viewership, but they're just, again, going to lose it because they're just confusing people.
Yes. I'm sure we'll talk plenty more about sprint races going forward. IndyCar, yep. Barber, to me, was super fun. I saw some interesting comments on it. We'll get to here. The only pre-Barber, only IndyCar news other than Barber is Tim Cindric and Tony George are being inducted into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Hall of Fame. Yay. I don't think we need to do too much there. Next week, we'll talk about the slight change to Indy 500 qualifying procedures since, you know, there will be bumping this year, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago. And Foyt released the Santino Ferrucci livery for the 500. It's kind of like the one they had last year, I think, or 2 years ago. The red, white, and blue one. I don't even remember who drove it at this point. But I don't know if you saw, I don't know if you watched it. Sarah, did you watch the Indy Lights race / Indy Next race? I still can't call it Indy Next.
So I was watching the Indy Next race side by side with the F1 rewatch.
Okay.
So yes, did I catch everything? Absolutely not.
I think this is the first time I've ever seen. So they were trying to pull a car out of the wall. I think it was Andretti's Louis Foster, and the tow truck got stuck in the mud. Now, it's Alabama, and it rained the night before, so, you know, the ground was wet. And I've seen a lot. I've seen, actually, at Alabama, I saw, it wasn't a tow truck, but it was something they were using to push cars out or, you know, tamp down the sand, tip over a couple of years ago when it was real stormy one day. So Barber seems to bring out the strangest things in racing. I don't know, not support vehicles, but maintenance vehicles.
That's, you know, really interesting. A lot of the coverage that I noticed as well was they just kept talking about how beautiful it was. And in my mind, I'm from the US, but I've never been to Alabama.
Yeah.
And Alabama is not the first place that comes to mind when you think about like beautiful nature preserves. So I think that there was like a lot of push on that as well, which I think is especially interesting in contradiction to a tow truck getting stuck in the mud, because that is much more Alabama vibes, at least to me.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about that. But, you know, from having been to Barber a handful of times, it is like an amazingly nice place. It's probably, discounting the Indy 500, one of the three like just like most scenic places you go to, mm-hmm. in terms of being in the track. Mm-hmm. The second you leave the track, you're like, oh yeah, I'm in Alabama. This is kind of crummy. Mm-hmm. I had a hotel for one night. It was the first year I was there. That like I walked into the room, it smelled weird, and I was like, this is kind of weird, but like, you know, it's a cheap hotel, like whatever. And I didn't, to my fans, I did not book this. I'm not gonna throw who booked it under the bus. It's not associated with the show in any capacity, or and has never been. But and there were cockroaches in the bathroom. I was like, absolutely not. I would sleep in the car if I have to. I don't care. I'm not staying here. So Alabama is kind of crummy. No offense to Alabama listeners and residents, but the track itself, that
for me, it was like a surprisingly good thing. Sure. Again, like I'm not from Alabama. I've never been to Alabama. I've never thought about going to Alabama. And so for me, seeing that, I was like, oh, like my perspective on Alabama changed because of that in a positive way. I also thought it was really interesting how often they were bringing up the like owner and founder of the track as well. He was involved in like all the media and all the press, which it's not typical, but it's not usually done as much to the degree that they did do it this weekend.
And that's every year at Barber. I don't know if I've met him or, but I've been at the previous press conference where they did a contract extension for the race, which I guess was 2018 or 2019. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was very much involved in that. I know they mentioned it like 80 times in the broadcast, but if you ever go, the motorcycle and car museum they have on the grounds is the coolest museum I've been to in terms of like different motorcycles and stuff that like, I know nothing about motorcycles, but it was very cool.
Wow, that's awesome.
So I just got a really dumb text message. We're going to ignore that. So
why are
let's
you looking
see.
At your phone when you could be looking at me and to our beautiful people, our beautiful audience, much more important than your text messages?
Yeah, you know, listen, I multitask every recording, so
I know that. I know that. Trust me, I'm aware.
So, I mean, nobody has seen or heard the amount of times I've had to like mute my microphone and like run to the bathroom in the middle of a recording, and Frenchie and whoever else is on are just talking away like nothing's happening. Like, these are the things that like the very nice listeners don't get to thankfully don't actually typically know that happens.
You're breaking the fourth wall for them. Don't take off the rose colored glasses, Mike.
Okay. Well, I did want to say thank you to everybody who listens, because for the second month in a row, we hit 100,000 downloads in a month. So yay. And I think if I'm doing the math correctly, we have more than not yet. We have almost doubled the amount of listeners we had all of last year.
Wow.
So yay. All right, Barber. So the thing, and this isn't the first time we've talked about this, or probably won't be the last time, but strategy races, you know, this case. And I think the TV broadcast did a really good job this year of explaining multiple times throughout the broadcast the differences, who was on what strategy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I love strategy races because in the end you have, and it doesn't always work out this way, but you have McLaughlin on the three stop, you have Grosjean on the two stop, who's going to win, and you really don't know. So it was just, to me, that, well, who, what strategy is going to come out on top? Are we going to see more change throughout the top five? Is super interesting. So, Sarah, as a relative newcomer to IndyCar, what did you think of a strategy race?
I loved it. I mean, obviously, we already know that IndyCar is more exciting racing than some other series. And there's a lot more overtaking. It's a lot more action. There's just a lot more to be aware of. So when we're watching a race like this, again, as you said, it was super helpful for me for them to explain the differences in strategy. So obviously, as a racing fan, I understand a two-stop versus a three-stop strategy. Like, I understand the benefits, the cons, whatever. And especially as it came to the discussion of, on paper, statistically, a three-stop is better. However, historically, the two stops have won this race. And again, for me as a newer fan, I wouldn't have known that. So it was really interesting to hear that, because in my mind, I'm like, oh, go with the statistics, go with the numbers. But if historically there are reasons for safety cars to come out in ways that they do or they don't, and you try to predict the safety cars, and with those safety cars, then you know that the two stop is going to win out, that makes it all the more interesting. So you're taking a racing series that is already much more interesting than the other ones that I'm currently watching and aware of, and giving it that like background and that context and having the commentators be really good at explaining it was super, super helpful for me. And it made it just really engaging and a really exciting race for me to watch.
Fair. Okay. Good point. I don't think, you know, listen, this was the cleanest race. And as far as I can tell, and I think we figured it out, that there hasn't been a race with 26 cars that finished on the lead lap since at least the early 90s. And I don't really know. It's, you know, maybe not totally accurate, but at least since IndyCar reunified in 2008, there has not been a race with 26, at least 26 cars finishing on the lead lap. Stingray Rob retired, I believe, with a mechanical thing.
I actually have a question for you.
Yes.
I had heard when I was in Long Beach that the teams get paid money from IndyCar every race that they don't crash a car. Is that true?
I don't know. That's, I'll pull out my phone and send a text message.
Is it to Frenchie? Can we bother him on vacation?
No, I'm not. I'm going to text somebody who probably knows.
Is it the other person, excuse me, that I'm thinking of?
No, it's, I don't want to give away his name on the show, but he's a longtime IndyCar media expert, so he would probably know.
Got it. I also heard this from probably an inside source, so if I just broke open the fourth wall of Indy that we shouldn't be talking about, that would probably be a problem. But the person that told me didn't tell me that it was secret news. I just thought I didn't know it.
Is it like prize money? Like, did they?
No, it's just like Indy doesn't want people to be crashing. So it's like almost like bonuses. Like they get a bonus for every race that they don't crash in.
Is that true? Okay. So we'll find out soon.
Because I wonder if that's also like, also Alabama, it's kind of hard to crash into things. It's not like it's a tight street course, but that just could be an interesting thing for drivers to have top of mind as well, especially as it comes up to the 500 of like they want as much money as possible in the bank. So that's just an interesting, like, not even strategy thing, but just to be more aware and more careful.
Yeah, I'm going to guess and say it's not true. Obviously, we'll find out whenever I find out. But I guess Barber is still, there's no, obviously, walls there. But it's still on the narrow side compared to most tracks. So it's still pretty risky. Yes, it is not true.
So it's not true.
It is not
interesting.
True.
I heard that from an inside source. So I wonder why they think that. I am now so curious. But I'm seeing them in like 2 hours. So I'll question them in 2 hours about it.
Yes. The person I texted, I trust with every potential rumor. So anyway, fair point. It's, listen, I think the big difference, and like, this isn't, you really can't compare to F1, maybe to a small degree, but more so to NASCAR, is IndyCar guys and drivers have a mutual respect for each other, even if they don't like each other. Like, listen, we know Connor Daly doesn't like Santino Ferrucci. A lot of drivers don't like Santino Ferrucci for whatever reason. We don't need to worry about that. But they also know at the end of the day that, this is a dangerous sport, and I'm going to give the guy the respect on the track that I would expect to be given. So I think, because, you saw Grosjean and McLaughlin, you saw Grosjean and Malukas, you saw Ray Hall dive bomb somebody a little bit, but they always give each other room. And not, not 2 feet of room. It might be 2 inches of room.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit more respect there, especially than seeing Ross Chastain punt somebody 15 laps into a 400 lap NASCAR race.
Well, even when it comes to the McLaughlin Grosjean bit that the commentators were really driving up this week following St. Pete, they have a mutual understanding that it was a racing incident, right? And neither of them are mad at each other. And they're just like, we're here to race. We're here to do this. So I think that mutual respect is something that's super interesting. And it's super cool to see in this sport because, again, there's so much more action. There's so many more overtakes, which means there's so much more room for error and risk. And so having that respect and not crashing into each other all the time is obviously a good thing.
Yes, agreed. Let's see. Stingray. Race was pretty clean. Otherwise, strategy, we've gone over that. Let's go back to Frenchie's text messages here and pull up the predictions for IndyCar. Mine are equally as bad. I know you're not surprised. So
no comment. Yeah. I plead the fifth.
So Frenchie had Pato having a good weekend. Pato finished
in a good spot, but not as good as usual.
I just don't think that McLaren in general had the top end pace that they usually do at Barber. Because Pato won it last year, didn't have it this year, but fourth is still good points. I had Ilott. He finished 13th, started 17th. Not a bad weekend, especially after Long Beach, but nothing impressive. Bad weekend. Frenchie had Ferrucci. He finished 20th. Was never really a factor all weekend. So sorry, Ilott didn't start 17th. He got 17 points this weekend. I can't read this article from lovely friend Kevin Dejewski. So we'll ignore that. And bad weekend, I had Grosjean. clearly nailed that one. So
why? Why? What would make you choose him? The hesitation. It's the hesitation for me.
You know what, ma'am? Until you listen when we make fun of you for not being part of any of the PLP racing fantasy leagues, you don't have any room to talk.
Yeah, that's fine. I accept.
So I just thought that he's been on fire. Barber is a track because it's super hard to pass. It was built for motorcycles, you know, 20 years ago, whenever, that if you put a wheel wrong, you could be in trouble. And as an aggressive driver, wouldn't be the first time somebody's put a wheel wrong there. So that was all I was going. I wasn't like, it wasn't purely a hot take with no reason, like my F1 predictions typically are. Anyway, that's that. There is no race this weekend. I don't think there's too much IndyCar news to go off of. You know, Pato is a little bummed about strategy, but to me, I don't. Did you watch Barber last year, Sarah?
Okay, no.
So it was again the two stop versus three stop, and then there was a caution, not right where the caution was this weekend. Like this weekend's caution played right into the three stops. Kept them in the game. That did not obviously happen last year. The caution was long enough that it made the two stop a significantly viable strategy. So, you know, you can't fault McLaren or anybody who went with the two stop strategy, because you assume at some point there's going to be more than one caution for four laps or five laps or whatever it was. So
right.
I don't think you can blame teams for trying the two-stop strategy.
And the caution this year, again, I did not watch last year, but I did some research and I was just looking it up. What I had found, what I had heard, which again might not be true, is that the caution this year came a lot later than it typically does at Barber.
I think
I'd seen that like there hasn't been a race at Barber that I didn't have a caution, which is normal. I feel like most races, like 90th percentile of races, have some sort of caution, but that I remember getting a few texts during the race of like, wow, I'm surprised that caution hasn't come out yet, because this is Barber and that it's usually earlier.
Yeah, usually, I mean, you know, there's always the lap one, turn one, anywhere that could happen, but usually at Barber, there's always been two or three cautions. Oh, I guess the last thing, you might not have like a too strong opinion on this one, is, you know, newer to IndyCar, but when the caution happened, I'm sure you saw, they do not throw the yellow flag right away.
Correct. I did see that.
They let guys finish the pit cycle when a car is not on fire, smashed bits everywhere. He's offline. Yeah. Probably nobody there at, I don't remember what turn that is. Nobody's going to go off track by pushing too hard and hit Stingray at that point. So they finish the pit cycles, and then they throw the yellow flag to collect the car. Naturally, the internet, once again, is up in arms. So before I give my thoughts, do you have any thoughts on that one? And it's okay if you don't.
I think I do, but I think there are more questions than thoughts, because, again, I don't know what the normality is, right? So in many other racing series, you throw the flag up immediately, no matter what's happening on the track, especially if it's on the track. But even if it's pulled off to the side, a lot of people, like most series, just immediately throw the flag up.
Yeah.
So what is the reasoning for not doing that? Just because it's not getting in the way of people, and only when they go to pick up the car, it'll actually get in the way. And like, beyond that, if that is the reasoning, then how do they, like, what, I guess my question is, what is in the rules and regulations that decides that that is how that operates, and the meaning behind that?
So there was a big change in philosophy. I was texting about it with somebody this weekend. It's been years now. Like, this is not a new thing. It's been 5 years at least, 4 years at least, because what would happen before, you know, they throw the yellow flag right away. It makes the two-stop strategy better, and it makes the three-stop strategy totally garbage. So I think the flip was maybe when Kyle Novak became the director of race control, and he said, this isn't exactly what he said, I'm just kind of guessing, let's take a caution like that. Or actually, it was at Barber a couple of years ago where Graham Rahal ran out, his battery died. And he was, again, somewhere where if you're driving too fast and you put a wheel wrong and you spin, you're still not going to hit him. If you are driving fast and you nail the apex and you're coming out of the apex, you're still not going to hit him. there's zero chance you're going to hit the guy.
So is this just this rule? Does this only exist at Barber?
No, it's that's just the most example, like the easiest example I remember.
Got it.
But, you know, if there are, if there are potential injuries involved, if there are, carbon fiber bits everywhere, if there is, potential that a safer barrier is damaged. Like, yeah, the yellow flag's coming. Yeah. This is.
Like, that can't happen at Nashville. There's nowhere to pull over. Like, you're correct. In the way.
Correct. Exactly. This is not everywhere. This is probably a road course sort of thing or. Yeah, maybe a street course if they pull off far enough into, runoff zone where it makes no difference. Sure. Mm-hmm. But again, IndyCar has been calling races this way for multiple years now. And the fact people are like, oh, they need to throw the yellow. Well, why are you expecting anything different?
Mm-hmm.
And
so I think my perspective on all of this, again, as like a newer fan that has not, I'm not as.
Yeah.
Trained as you, I understand and I appreciate how this different strategy of waiting to call out the yellow if there is really no harm to keep the field even. I like that. I appreciate that. I think the only issue that really comes in here is an issue, again, that I'm pulling this from my knowledge of Formula One, is that leaves room for human intervention on, okay, when do we call a yellow and why do we call a yellow? So having that. Those humans making those decisions without precise rules and regulations for when, why, how leaves that room for differences. And maybe that's also another reason why people could be angry about it and up in arms about it, because you're just giving them their own discretion to decide when and where and how to do that, which obviously is not always understood or preferred.
Yeah, I see. I understand. From my standpoint, and I think like this is something I've said probably like way too many times in general, whether it's something like this or, a penalty call or, decision like that is. And I know like Alex Rossi has said this on his podcast a bunch. He doesn't care if they say every time this is a caution and every time this isn't a caution. Or, this is a penalty or this isn't a penalty or there's gray area, as long as it's consistent. So the drivers know, hey, Stingray is off there. They're probably not going to throw a yellow. So, and, it's been 5 years and I think they've been pretty damn consistent. Maybe not so much on the penalty side of things, but on the caution side of things. Yeah, you can pretty much tell when there is or isn't going to be in a situation like that. So.
Got it.
I know what you mean, but it's just.
But if there's been consistency, then that makes that moot.
It's, this isn't like a new thing. Like this has been like they made that change. I'm going to say when Kyle Novak became IndyCar race control director here, and we're going to look up when Kyle Novak took over as IndyCar director. Does Kyle Novak have a Wikipedia page? Okay, it was January 5th, 2018. Kyle Novak was named race director of the then Verizon IndyCar Series. So it has been, five seasons. We're going on season six now of Kyle Novak. This is nothing new. This is not a surprise. We should just listen, whether you like it or not, you know what's coming. And if you know what's coming to me, you just learn to like be like, all right, it happened.
Yeah.
Because I think... Before that, I don't know, let's call it a rule. Before that decision-making rule, there was a race, it might have been Toronto of 2017, where Scott Dixon was just, he was going to run away with it. And a caution came out, and he ended up finishing like 18th because of just the way it flipped strategy game completely. So they're trying to take out things like that, where it completely screws somebody over. That's the best example I can give.
No, I appreciate that it's trying to keep the playing field even.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's all I have. So let's wrap it up with a reminder. So since you're in Miami, you'll be at the track all weekend. Yeah. Where can people follow you and what? I know you can't say who you're interviewing, but what else do you guys have going on this weekend? If I didn't if you didn't mention anything.
Yeah, 100%. So as I mentioned at the top of the episode, most of our content is going to live on GridClick on Instagram. I also have my own personal Instagram that will definitely be populated, but with probably a lot more. Actually, it might be interesting because I'm just very friendly with a lot of the Formula One world. And so what goes on my page is a lot of the BTS. So like just the hangouts with the people that work in F1. Like after this, I'm headed off to meet Lizzie McIntosh, Ariana Bravo, Clint Montgomery, Laura Winters. Like they're all hanging out together right now and they're texting me like, where are you? Come over. So my account will have like a lot of the interesting BTS okay. of some F1, but the like official content will be on GridClick. And then if you are in Miami and you would like to come meet us, we'll be posting more information again on our Instagram. I believe we're going to try to do a meetup on Thursday at the Racing Fan Fest that is in Wynwood. If that doesn't happen, then we will be doing a meetup at the track. We did a meetup at the track last year, and that was very hard because the track is just massive and it takes forever to get everywhere. We still had a crowd of like 50 people, which was like nuts in my mind. And I didn't even know 50 people
cared
about us.
It's hard to do at any track. The only person who seems to do meetups well is Bob Pockrass for NASCAR. Otherwise, it's just so hard to organize.
It ended up working out fine. But again, one of the issues with the Miami track is people don't have service and it's a very big track. And even last year, it was like, I think 95 degrees outside. So it was just like boiling hot. Yeah, that face is correct. Last year was disgusting. This year, thankfully, the weather's a lot better. But in either way, shape or form, we're going to be trying to do a meetup, I believe, on Thursday afternoon. We'll confirm all of that on the GridClick socials. And then we also have a group chat. So if you are in Miami and you are arriving too late or you don't want to meet up and talk to people face to face, because I totally understand that, same vibes. I get it. I also hate people. So does host. We have a WhatsApp group chat that you can join. That's basically insofar a lot of people talking about all the different events that they're going to this week or what's going on at the track. So we even had someone send a photo today of the Williams pop-up that opened yesterday that it's like it's empty now, but by the weekend it's going to be crammed and crazy. So yeah, just keep up with us there. And then that's how you can find us in person as well if you are so inclined. And we'll be doing a lot of content while we're there, but also a lot of like, of course, news and interviews and kind of everything under the sun.
Cool. Well, have fun and thanks. Good luck. I'll share stuff out. I don't know. Maybe from the personal page. I seem thanks, to get host. More engagement when I share stuff from my personal page than the podcast page.
Interesting. And I have. Well, you guys are on Twitter anyway.
Yeah, Twitter is more of the podcast thing. Instagram, like, I have it and we post stuff on occasion, but like an Instagram story for the podcast and we have like 5,000 followers on there and I'll get like 50 views on it. Like there's just no engagement. There's just no engagement on there.
That's wild. Well, that's what happens when you're on Twitter, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like we're opposite. We have a Twitter, but I think we've tweeted like literally twice, maybe three times. Like
was sitting next to you when you made the GridClick Twitter.
Correct. And that was at Daytona, probably.
I think it was when we were still in Miami, but it was that week. Yeah.
Yeah. It was that week. Yeah. 100%. And like, we still haven't tweeted. So Instagram is where you find us. That's just where we exist. And that's also because we make a lot of photo and video content. Like that's primarily what we do. So that doesn't really work as well on Twitter. It's just not really the right format. We're Instagram people.
I am addicted now to the CapCut app on my phone. I have multiple videos from my NASCAR experience, I have one right now that I don't think I'm going to use, but I just might post on my personal Twitter for fun. But I took a couple videos. I had no idea what I was doing in NASCAR land. Like
I might be going to my first NASCAR race in July. I might be going to Chicago.
Okay, that's fun.
Just FYI, not confirmed, but
I'll be at Pocono for NASCAR also in July.
That's so exciting. But on CapCut, for those of you who are not flies on the wall and don't see into Host and I lives, Host saw me probably have a 2-hour meltdown at Daytona trying to get CapCut to work because it was like automatically doing something that I didn't want it to do, whatever. It was like literally driving me up a wall and I was about to cry. And Host was like, There, my child. It'll be okay. And then he would just walk away. It was just so great.
Sounds like me. So on the iPhone app, there's a lot of like pre-made templates that are handy to make like a really quick video. They're not great when you're trying to like totally customize a video. And for NASCAR, I'm not trying to totally customize a video because I didn't even know what I was I didn't know what I should be focusing on because I was so new to. That was the first NASCAR race I've been to in 14 years, 15 years.
That sounds like that was me at Sebring.
Yeah, right. And so, yeah, anyway, we'll stop babbling on about behind the scenes stuff that nobody cares about. Everybody enjoy F1 this weekend. Thanks for listening. Love you guys. And Frenchie, have fun on vacation. Come back safe and goodbye.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.